Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Way back in 2005, two brothers set off on a road trip that would save the world and change television.
Those beefy Hemsworth boys?
Not the Hemsworths. How many times do I have to say it? For 15 seasons and 327 episodes, Supernatural took audiences on a wild ride of family, fate, and faith with a rocking soundtrack and a seriously cool car.
But that was then, Bobbo, and this is now. And yes, the show has quote-unquote ended, but we're not quite done with the journey.
No, we're not.
And that's why we're watching it all over again, or for Rob and me, for the first time.
That's right.
Diving deep into every episode of Supernatural with the fine folks who made it. And we're taking you along for the ride.
Whether you like it or not. I'm Rob Benedict. I played Chuck Shirley, a.k.a. God.
Spoiler!
Yeah, it is a bit of a spoiler, but hey, spoilers are fair game here.
Fine. And I'm Richard Spate Jr., and I played the Trickster, also known as the Archangel Gabriel. And I did a little bit of Loki work in there.
Okay, you know what? We're running out of time.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about the entire series, so whatever we say, accept it. You've been warned.
So buckle up and settle in.
Because this, my friend, is Supernatural, then and now.
Hi, everybody. This is Rob Benedict.
Rich Spate right here.
That's right. He's Rich Spate. And I'm Rob Benedict, and this is Supernatural Then and Now, and we're talking about Season 2, Episode 11.
Playthings.
Playthings.
Dude, look, before we get into it, I think we have some Patreon news to share. Robbie?
Yes. Last week in Patreon, we posted bonus segments with Robin for all of our members, and for our Archangel members, we posted the video interview with Brianna. Now, if you haven't yet, be sure to sign up to hear bonus segments from today's interview, ad-free early access to the podcast, and other goodies.
Early access ad-free episodes come out on Sunday.
Bonus segments from that episode come out Tuesday.
And select Thursdays, we publish bonus content from past episodes.
So check it all out on patreon.com. That's patreon.com/SBN then and now.
All right, Robbie, let's dive into the episode.
All right. Sam and Dean set off for Cornwall, Connecticut, to investigate a string of deaths at the Pierpont Inn. Pierpont, you know what that means in French?
Pierpoint.
Rock Bridge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Susan, a single mother, runs the hotel but sold it and is soon moving out.
Why do you think she got divorced?
I think he was an alcoholic. And
really?
He was rarely home. He had a lot of ladies on the side.
Oh, she can do better than that. I'm glad she left him. Good for you, Susan.
Me too. She lives there with her young daughter, Tyler, and her invalid mother, Rose.
Or her invalid mother, Rose.
Yeah, she...
Nobody ever validated the mom.
Yeah, she needs to go in and get revalidated. And also, apparently, another daughter, but we don't know yet that it's not a daughter. Anyway, they also meet an elderly bellboy named Sherwin.
Wouldn't that be Bellman?
Nope.
You never grow out of bellboy?
I don't know.
Like, no. When you turn 13, there's not a ceremony taking you from bellboy to bellman?
No, I don't think so. Bell weird. Teen, Bell preteen.
More like Bell screenager.
Am I right? The boys get suspicious when they discover hoodoo symbols around the house and a giant dollhouse that is a scale recreation of the hotel.
Do they know who do the hoodoo symbols?
I don't know. Do you hoodoo?
I don't know. There's the band from Australia, the Hoodoo Gurus. Maybe the Hoodoo Gurus hoodooed the hoodoo.
Good point.
I wonder if you made them out of feces, would it be doo-doo hoodoo?
What if howdy doody was used as a hoodoo symbol? So it'd be howdy doody hoodoo.
And what if Howdy Doody could actually defecate and made a hoodoo symbol to be Howdy Doody doo-doo voodoo? Wait, no, Howdy Doody doo-doo hoodoo.
Doo-doo hoodoo.
And then somebody with who doesn't have great grammar wanted to know who did it. Hoodoo, Howdy Doody doo-doo hoodoo. There. And then somebody used that hoodoo doo-doo doo-doo voodoo. And somebody who wanted to know who it was, they could say, hoodoo, howdy, doo-doo, doo-doo, hoodoo, voodoo.
Nevertheless, there are creepy dolls all over the place. In the dollhouse, there's a doll that resembles the latest victim. And Tyler has an imaginary friend named Maggie. That's right. That Ooh. Other daughter, not a daughter at all, but an imaginary friend named Maggie. An appraiser comes by the inn and mysteriously hangs himself. At first, Sam and Dean suspect Rose is using hoodoo magic. Sam gets drunk because he feels guilty he wasn't able to save the appraiser. And the brothers discuss what Dad told Dean in the hospital, that Dean should kill Sam if he were to turn evil. And Dean promises to make good on that order.
Good.
The brothers find a photo of Rose from her childhood, and she's sitting in the lap of her caregiver. A woman is wearing a hoodoo symbol. Sam and Dean head upstairs to visit Rose.
Oh, however, do that again. I think it should be that woman is wearing, her caregiver, a woman who's wearing a hoodoo symbol. Like, that should be one sentence, I think.
The brothers find a photo of Rose from her childhood, and she's sitting in the lap of her caregiver, a woman who is wearing a hoodoo symbol. Sam and Dean head upstairs to visit Rose. However, they come to find out she's completely catatonic. Nope, she's completely catatonic. She's got a gin and tonic. And she's completely, however, she is completely catatonic.
She made herself, she and her cat are knee deep in gin and tonics.
She couldn't be guilty of this because she's catatonic. Susan shows up. She's furious. She tells the boys they must leave the inn or she's calling the police.
Right. They got to go.
Well, those sneaky boys sneak around back. At this point, they remind me kind of the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, you know they're what I mean? Very Hardy Boy-esque.
Yeah. In the process, they save Susan from a possessed car that tries to run her down. They figure out that Tyler's imaginary friend Maggie is actually the spirit of Rose's deceased sister who died as a child. Rose was using hoodoo magic to keep her out, but her stroke stopped her ability to do it. Now Maggie's spirit wants to prevent the sale of the inn. Additionally, she wants to keep Tyler as a playmate forever, so she attempts to drown her in the pool.
Such a creepy sequence.
Yeah. Very creepy. Rose is able to call her away telepathically. She makes a deal that her spirit will stay with Maggie's at the end. Sam rescues Taylor from drowning and soon after discovers Rose's dead body. The boys leave and the episode ends with the spirits of the two girls playing jump rope. Creepy, 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 creepy.
All right, let's review it, man. You start. I feel like I've started the last few. You go.
I really feel like the show is, it's reached a peak. Mid-season two. I liked the episode a lot. I thought it was very creepy. I loved the Shining references. There are a few things that I gave me pause, like, I felt like Jared, Sam getting drunk in the middle came out of nowhere for me a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
All of a sudden he was drunk and I was like, what? And then I thought maybe Jared was just drunk, but no, Sam is really, drunk. And, yeah, so that threw me a little bit. Besides that, I thought Charles Beeson did an amazing job directing, such cool shots. What did you think?
I thought it was great. I agree with everything you're saying. I thought it was really, really, really creepy, beautifully shot. The detail of the house and the set was stunning. The model house they built for the dollhouse was stunning.
Yeah.
The dolls were creepy. The little bitty figurines in the house were super creepy. Mm-hmm. And the way it was shot and edited and all tied together was just so well done. And the acting. The kids were amazing. Everybody was great. I thought it was really, really, really strong. I think the two things that were kind of, I mean, when I say bump for me, were tiny. I mean, it was a great episode. But the Sam kind of silly drunk Sam seemed slightly out of character a little bit to me, too.
A little bit out of character.
You're dumb. You know, I was like, no, I'm not sure.
And there was just nothing leading up to it. It was like, it just kind of like, he's looking out the window. He's a little bit depressed. Next time we see him, he's just wasted. And then it kind of pans over like, oh yeah, there was also alcohol in the room.
Yeah, a little bit. I definitely agree with you. Although I think, I agree with you. I think the point was even Jensen, like we're looking at it through Dean's eyes, right? And Dean didn't see it coming either.
Right, totally.
So yeah, So I understand what they're going for. And I think it actually worked. It just was a little like, The other thing to me, and this is no fault of the show made when it was made, but definitely some jokes about why do they think we're gay that do not stand the test of time.
They do not. No, they do not.
That give it a little bit of a dated feel.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing that sort of like, oh wow, that's.
I had that same thing written down. But it was amazing. The whole pool sequence was amazing.
It was so well shot and so well done and so creepy and so much actual peril on behalf of the people in the hotel, the little girls, the little girl, and the mom. The sequence with the toys moving in the dollhouse and then the actual, playground things moving around in real life or not real life. What the tiny ones moving and the actual sized ones moving simultaneously was incredibly creepy and well done.
What do you think's going on with Sam and Dean right now? So dad said to Dean, you're going to have to kill Sam.
You might someday have to kill Sam.
And Sam, when he was drunk just now, he's saying,
if I go rogue, if I become the creepo that dad fears I may become, don't hesitate, take me out. So he's Sterling K. Brown was saying, right? Sterling K. Brown was like, hey, man, I know what this dude is. We got to take him out before he does something bad. And Sam's note to Dean was, hey, if I actually, maybe don't take me out before I do something bad, but if I start to turn, do not hesitate. Take me out because I don't want to become the thing that I'm hunting. I don't want to bring negativity and death and carnage.
So Sam's kind of come around on that because at first wasn't he like, screw dad for saying that? Or no?
No, Dean is annoyed that he's been saddled with this information and now has to figure out what to do with it. Uh-huh. And then he unburdens himself to Sam. And I think Sam's bummed, but also glad to know, but also bummed because it's about him. And it sort of drives a wedge between the brothers in that, like, I need you to be responsible for this moment if it were to happen. And Dean's got to say yes. If he says no, then Sam feels like Dean's not holding up his end of the deal. Because Sam doesn't want to. He's like, look, I won't know that I'm turning. So you got to step in and take me out if I start to go sour.
Right. And so just now Dean said that he would do it. But we all know that Dean would never.
Well, do we? And the other thing is, what I thought was insightful was it made me feel when Sam got upset, granted he was drunk, when he got upset about not being able to save the appraiser, you got the sense that he's trying to outrun his own fate by being the savior of others.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows he's going to do negative. So in advance of that, or he fears he's going to do negative. So in advance of that, he's doing as much positive as he can do.
Okay.
And carries a weight with him that Dean doesn't carry when he fails at executing that attempt to save or at least intercede in situations.
Okay.
Save people or intercede in negative situations.
Okay. Wow. I'm glad I asked. Look at you, all of a sudden, the Sam and Dean therapist.
Somebody read the Cliff Notes. No, I'm kidding. Let's give it our facial
hair
review.
I rank it a full beard, but like my beard. So it's got gray patches. You know what I mean? It hasn't aged great in parts.
Right.
Bumps a little bit, but all in all, when you're just looking at the face, like, oh, that's a solid beard.
I think I'm going a step above you on that. I'm not going full Chris Stapleton, which is sort of the perfect, to me, it's like, that's the perfect episode, the Stapleton.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going, if Stapleton had a trim. So it's just one step shy of being a perfect episode. And part of that is not even its fault. It's sort of the dated elements of it. You know, I would think that sort of the antiquing line of joking and that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. I mean, I feel ours is about the same because I said it's like
yours is because people can't see your beard, but it's kind of short. And Stapleton's is huge. I feel like if you grew that out for
I think it's
like,
important to say at this point that your perfect beard and my perfect beard are two different things.
Ooh, you know what, Rob? You've opened a whole can of beard worms here. Bearded worms. By the way, I went to see the bearded worms.
They're
at so whiskey.
Good.
It's so
They're
good.
So good.
So what is your perfect beard? Give me a representative. Like I've got the Stapleton.
Mine is the hold on. It's a dated reference. But it is the Kenny Loggins.
Okay.
Kenny Loggins.
The Kenny Loggins.
For most of the people that are listening to this podcast, Kenny Loggins was a singer-songwriter made famous by, he did the
Loggins Messina.
Well, yeah, but he did the, what's the dancing movie with Kevin Bacon? Footloose. He's Footloose. That's Kenny Loggins. Footloose.
So what era Kenny Loggins? I'm looking at Kenny Loggins. He's got a lot of different beards. So which era? Really?
I mean, that the one that's second down on the left side, the leather jacket on.
Yeah, so Kenny, if you guys at home want to go to the Essential Kenny Loggins, it's on his Wikipedia site. It's also, I think it's just a greatest hits album he put out. It's a black and white shot of Kenny Loggins. Looks like he's got a fan on him, but he's got a nice thick beard.
Maybe we can post that picture.
Yeah, so we'll go with Robbie's ideal perfect man, I guess, is Kenny Loggins.
Late 70s beard.
Yeah, Robbie. Yeah, okay, so Robbie likes the Kenny Loggins beard. So that's your... Right. So using that as our measuring stick, what is your... Is this just south of a Loggins for you, like this episode?
Just south of a Loggins, yeah.
Okay, and I'm just south of the Stapleton. So you're right, we're kind of in sync here. All right, good reviews.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our guest for this episode. It's another returning guest. Jerry Wanick served as the production designer and producer on the series for all 15 seasons. And let's get into our interview with Jerry.
We are so lucky to have Jerry Wanick back with us. I mean, there's legend, journeyman, but also the guy in charge of the look and feel of Supernatural from day one. And what better episode to talk about when you're talking about a look and a feel than this episode? I mean, holy smokes.
Yeah.
I'd like to right out of the gate talk to you about how you found that house, because this episode is so house dependent, right? It's right. So set dependent. So talk to me about that process.
Well, you know, as is always the case when we start an episode, I get like a bunch of location files and go through and say, no, maybe. And we go look at the maybe. And after, several days that we came upon Selkirk, which was an old nunnery. And being a Catholic boy and an altar boy, that it had some resonance for, I'm sure, really bad shit happened there.
Yeah.
And it just had the right look, period. I mean, it's the old Tudor, and it was the closest thing to that haunted house that we could find. I mean, I'm just astounded on how good that episode looked. Not from my point of view, but just the way Charles shot it, the way Serge shot it.
So this was your first episode with Charles, right?
Yeah, this first one with Charles. So like when I watch an episode, I usually have several things that I would want to take back and go, oh God, if we only did this. And the only shot that I didn't like in this was very close to the opening when we're establishing the house, we have a white delivery van go through. There's no graphics on it. And that just screams like, oh, so it's somebody from production. They took off the street and drove through the frame.
God, I didn't even recognize it. Did you catch that, Rob?
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's part of my whatever.
Well, attention to detail is what that is. Yeah. It's attention to detail. Yeah. A couple of things worth mentioning as we get out of the gate here. A, it's just a great episode. It's another one of those home runs from guest cast to execution. And you mentioned, and I don't want to gloss past it, Charles Beeson's first episode here for Supernatural. Charles Beeson would be on this episode talking to us, but for the fact that we lost him right at the beginning of COVID. I mean, he had a heart attack, I believe, was I heard.
Yes.
Over in the UK. And I had just seen the man in season 15 when he came out to do his episode, and he seemed fit as a fiddle. It's a tragic loss. You know, he directed some monumentally impactful Supernatural episodes, starting with this one.
Yes.
And so let me ask you this, and maybe this is out of your purview, but do you know how Charles came to be a part of the show? Do you know that backstory at all?
I do not. I mean, that would have been Eric and Phil and Bob, because those guys, you know, really make all the directorial decisions.
Right.
And but it's not unlike when you and I work together. Like if I pitch Charles stuff, like when we get into this, there's this bar scene, and I said, you know what? This is kind of creepy. Let's do The Shining the best we can. And so we did the underlit bar. We had the old guy and, you know, Jensen sitting at the bar, and Beeson just milked the hell out of it. But it was perfect. And, you know, stuff like that, he would just get so excited. But his film knowledge and his cinematic choices, because like when he follows the boys down the hall and the lens is on the floor, just following their footsteps as they go away, you know, That's just, it's just beautiful. And then when we start intercutting between the dollhouse and the real set.
So cool.
I mean, it's just, you know, the editing, but you can't edit until you have the film, right?
Correct. Like he shot it. I mean, like editor, he made easy work for the editor. Not that it's ever an easy job, but he gave them the lumber they needed to build that amazing sequence. You know what I mean?
He did. And, you know, so happy because Charles left the show after a while. And then when he came back for the last season, just as a goodwill gesture, and, you know, just because he just, and a lot of our crew was still intact. And he goes, I missed you guys, you know? And then when he came back, he goes, I am so glad you guys are still killing it. You guys are still like invested and, you know, going out there and doing your best work every day. He said, I thought I'd come back here and everybody be just kind of like hanging out and, you know, phoning it in. I said, nah.
No.
And we did, you know, a couple of great episodes there, you know, with Rowena's set. And, you know, maybe if, you know, we'll get to that at some point. But,
To sort of close the circle on Charles, although he's just a sorely missed, valuable member of the team, but he didn't stray far from the family because he went on to do Revolution with Kripke. Like he became the producing director.
Yes.
He stayed in the Kripke verse, you know?
Yeah. And then he went and then he did Timeless.
Yeah. So,
right. You know,
Kripke's loyal to those who serve the show well, and that's cool to see.
Yeah. No. And, you know, like you said, Richard, you know, lovely man. And he was so happy because, you know, I worked with him. Probably 3-4 months before he passed. And he was just in such a great place. He had just gotten a place in the south of France where he hung out and drank wine and, you know, never overindulged or overate or anything. It must have just been genetics because, you know, he said heart attack. But,
Well, the tone, you know, going back to the gift he left us, some of these episodes and these visuals, it was. Dude, I mean, Robbie, I don't know. You and I haven't talked about this as always. Is there anything creepier than a room full of dolls? Like, I challenge you to find
something. Yeah, dolls are creepy.
I know what's creepier. So that was season 2, episode 11.
Right.
As soon as we got done shooting that, George put every one of those dolls in the same position behind his desk.
Oh my God. This is George Newman we're talking about, who has worked with Jerry forever.
You know, and George is a pretty macho dude, you know, but, you know, you go in there and they're all creepy as hell. And it took a lot to resource, you know, all those dolls. But every time I go in there, I mean, I'd be talking to George and I'd just be shaking my head like, what the hell?
I tell you what, that's George's way of saying, don't pop into my office for a quick visit. You know, I don't want you here.
How long did they stay there?
Till the end. They were there for, you know, 13 years.
That's funny.
Yeah, I tell you, we have a note in our notes about the interview that says creepy dolls, creepy kids, creepy old ladies. We can add creepy George to that list.
I think creepy George should do a cameo. Yeah,
Jerry, whose job was it to make that model house?
Well, it was the, you know, art department. So we started out by doing exact drawings of the existing house. Of course, we changed the geography of the interior because the way the interior played was much different than what it was in the actual house. But we were very fortunate because we designed this thing. And one of the guys on our paint crew was an avid model builder. I mean, he just like, he saw this and he just went into it head first.
Oh, man.
And it was a passion. And I'm still marveled at what he did. And again, you know, everybody contributed, like, you know, with the little miniatures and the actual practical lighting. And that was another Charles Beeson, like to start on a little practical light in the dollhouse and then, you know, fade to the real light in the real space. But again, the storytelling, you know, back and forth from that dollhouse, it just, I was mesmerized today. I just absolutely loved it.
I think we got to point out to people who are fans of the show, sometimes there's one piece that gets lost in translation, I think. And I know because when Rob and I post these shows and then we see reviews and people also often comment, oh my gosh, I didn't know, blah, 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 blah. One of the things I think people need to understand is they found that house, which took a day or two, and then they dove into building that model. That model was probably built in 6 days. Like, that's an unbelievable turnaround.
Yeah, no, it you're right. It would have to be in the, you know, 6 days is probably the max, because we're on an 8-day shoot, and you know, by the time the drawings were made. But again, you know, Brian Wadsworth, our model maker, just was obsessed. And wow. Yeah, it was very fortuitous to have that. Man, seeing it again, I just thought it was wonderful. Here's the irony of this. You know, Cyrus, another one of our dearly departed but wonderful producers, said, okay, you know, we're done with the Dollhouse. Let's donate it to a children's hospital. What better gift than a beautiful, you know, scale model, you know, this Dollhouse?
That's amazing.
And Warner Brothers wouldn't let us.
What?
Oh, no.
It wouldn't let us because it was an asset. Because that model cost $30,000 to build.
Or, you know? Or as Peter Roth likes to say, lunch.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, actually, Peter Roth, now he's on a beach somewhere going, lunch. And yeah, he's retired.
And he's signing a $30,000 tab.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we tried to explain that it's just going to sit on a shelf. And it did for 11 years. Finally, at the end of the show, we ended up giving it to the owner of that house. Because,
oh, that's pretty good.
Well, you know, I'm very grateful to people that have nice houses like that, that are open to filming.
And, yeah.
You know, since they weren't going to let us donate it to a hospital, I think we made up a sale to him for like pennies, but you know.
Wow. Okay, guys, hold on. We're coming right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And now back to the episode. The bar you guys built is so great. The homage to The Shining. Yeah. And again, I'm the non-director asking questions, so and me and the rest of the listeners. But how, do you work with the lighting department in terms of like how to light it, or do you kind of just design it and say like, "Hey guys, this is a Shining reference and I want the light coming up from the bar.
No, we built it. And, you know, Serge and I were very close and still are, you know, we're great friends. And, but we always were in conversation about what I was trying to do and how to help him execute what he had to do. And again, right. Charles was so knowledgeable, and the way he did the creepy push into the bar.
Yeah.
As Jensen walked in, you know, what else struck me was, I know Kripke was one of the writers on this episode.
Uh-huh.
It has such wonderful moments of humor, you know, and that's what Kripke every episode brought to it. You know, he just has this, you know, wry sense of humor that, you know, the banter between the boys, that freaking scene at the door with Jensen telling the lady that Jared wants to play with her dolls.
Yeah.
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 You know, that's great. You know, you mentioned that, and I noticed as well, there's obviously sort of the template of humor that exists throughout a lot of the episodes. Yeah. But then this one had a beat that struck me as especially funny, and it, I don't know if it would strike everybody as especially funny, but it's when they come back and they have the mom, and she's almost got hit by the car, right? And Jared and Jensen are trying to explain it to her, and Jared says something, and she's like, what? And Jensen goes, blah, 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 blah. It's a lot to unpack. The point is, but you know, like he gets out of the explanation mid explanation, and it's just, you know, it's a simple moment that Jensen can make funny. You know, it's written to be funny, but Jensen can sort of thread that needle very, very well. Right. And it's just a humorous moment where in a show that took itself too seriously, they would be really serious about the explanation and make sure that it got through. And they just sort of turned it into a lighter moment that I thought was really fun in the middle of a heavy sequence. Because it's a heavy ass sequence, man, between dolls and kids in peril. Like, you know, it's a lot of...
That's vintage Kripke, you know, to insert the humor into that situation. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, the characters that Rich and I both played on the show at the beginning, at least, were that, you know, a little bit of comic relief.
Oh, within. I thought your characters always had a great, you know, sense of comedy and you guys delivered it great too.
I know. Listen, I got to say, we're talking about Kripke doing a pass on this, but the episode is credited to Matt Whitten. So I just want to be sure we give, you know, Matt credit for his voice in this thing. Obviously, Kripke has a tonal influence, but Matt Whitten, who wrote this episode, did a lights out job of
Absolutely. Of
doing what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, no, and there was some great misdirects in there. And, you know, I mean, again, the mastery of the way Charles shot it, because, you know, the imaginary friend wasn't obvious until...
No! I didn't see it coming.
So well done. I was like, what?
Yeah.
When she said, I got one daughter, I'm like, no, you got two daughters.
Yeah.
And we'll get to, you know, a little loose stuff later, but man, the stunts, that underwater sequence was so suspenseful. And, you know, it's like you thought for sure that the little girl was going to die.
Yeah.
You know, just the coverage under in the pool, and man, it was just incredible.
I've seen that shot before, Rob, isolated, like maybe in a greatest hits reel or some sort of like, you know.
What, of the girl underwater?
The jump and landing in the plastic. Like they've used that as like in montage sequences about Supernatural. It's as creepy as you get in terms of like paranoid fear. People have paranoid fears about airplanes and stuff. But being entrapped in plastic in the
plastic
water like that.
In water.
Like,
yeah.
Surface is right here, but you can't get to it. Like unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when we first, because there's two different mansions we shot. That pool was in a different place as well as their bedroom. And then we built the little bathroom for Sam to get, you know, his hangover sickness. But those were two different locations. And the place that we did the bedroom and the bathroom had that pool in the back. And man, I've wanted to shoot that pool forever because I've known about it and there was never a reason to. And, you know, Charles saw it and he went, oh, here we go. Just embraced it because it's all glass and there's a lot of people that just go, oh, I can't do it. So, you know, there's going to be too much light, too much this, too much that. Get over it. You know, it's the right place. It looks great. It's great for the story. Now make it work. And they made it work.
And yes, we are going to talk specifically about your experience with Lou, but let's talk about Lou's involvement in this show, for example, because Lou, you have two young children in a perilous spot. Because obviously there's protections in place, but look, they're on the other side of a railing and they are hanging up there. They obviously didn't do the jump themselves, but they are in that's a tricky sequence to maneuver from a safety standpoint.
Absolutely. I don't think I think what we did is we extended a little bit of a deck beyond, like underneath that railing, so they had more place to stand on, but they were on the other side. And, you know, since that was Harvey Fedora's daughter. That
what? Played,
oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the lead little girl was Harvey Fedora's daughter.
What?
Yeah.
Dude!
So I'm sure she was.
So well-paced. Harvey was a gaffer. Is that the right title for
No, he's Grip.
Key Grip.
Yeah.
Key Grip on the show for 13 seasons or whatever. And that's insane. I had no idea. So his daughter went on. Is his daughter still an actress for a living? Is that
you know what? I was going to look that up, today, and I didn't get around to it. But
we can do that. We got a guy.
There you go. But she did go on to do stuff. I don't know if she's still doing it.
Wow.
But man, she held that. You know, that was her episode.
She was great.
She was great in that episode. Yeah.
So was
both of those girls.
Yeah, both the girls.
Both the girls are great, and the mom and the bartender. I mean, like,
oh yeah,
and the creepy old mom.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah! With well, no lines, she was outstanding.
Outstanding. Oh,
yeah.
You know what I gotta say, it's just
Jerry. This show, I don't know what the recipe was, but and now it's going to sound like I'm self-aggrandizing Robin myself because we benefited from this. But the guest casting on this show was stunning. You rarely had a guest cast that wasn't up to snuff and unable to match the boys. The guest cast came in almost always super strong. And just knocked the leather off the ball, which is what enabled those episodes to thrive. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the icing on the cake is always that layer. And without that layer, you know, the cake falls apart and nobody cares about the rest of it. It's like I've told this story a number of times. We built this huge mission in the hills in Texas for one of McMurtry's miniseries. And it was like, you know, best thing I'd ever built. McMurtry would sit in the courtyard and go, Jerry, this is your masterpiece. And then they had very uncompelling scenes and not really actors to sell it. And nobody cared, you know, nobody cared.
Right.
So everything has to work. And that's why you get a director that, like Beeson and Richard, you're very adept at it, is involving the guest stars and making them feel part of it and getting the best performance. Because in the end, that's what counts.
Yeah. Well, it's both. I mean, it goes both ways, you know, and you can have a great actor with a crappy set too. And then it just looks cheap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then suddenly you're knocked down a peg. Everybody's got to be doing their best work. And then you have a great episode of TV.
That's what I'm continually impressed by this show. You know, it's the CW. It's not the network with the most money, you know, NBC, ABC. They put out a lot of money to make shows, CBS, but on the CW to pull off what you guys pulled off, especially in the early seasons, it's really remarkable.
Yeah, and Rob, that's a really good point. And you got to credit Bob Singer, Eric Kripke, Phil. They really went to bat. I think Bob was the lead on it, that you're not taking money out, even though like after 5 years is when they usually just rob the bank and kind of go to pattern and, you know, try to milk it for whatever it could be. And Bob Singer goes, nope, not doing that. And we just kept on upping the ante. And
that's great.
Speaking of things that people do notice, the deer head. So there's a recurring theme in our notes here that there's a deer head that isn't in one of the motel rooms and is reinvents itself in 12 different episodes. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jerry?
Yeah, I did. We finally had to put it to rest, but you know, it was just one of those things. It was kind of fun. And, you know, we use taxidermy quite a bit because it's just creepy enough.
Yeah.
And I think it's like the fur was falling off and I think it lost an ear and, you know, we just kept going. You know,
that's but, awesome.
Yeah, you know, George has a pretty wicked sense of humor. And, you know, I would come to stage a lot of times and just chuckle, you know, just like, all right, let's do that.
Would that be something that the directors would be aware of, or was that kind of your guys' own inside baseball joke there?
No, I mean, the only director that knew would be Phil, because he'd go, guys, I saw that deer and that, you know, because he's editing.
Yeah.
He approves everything.
He doesn't miss a thing.
No, nothing is by like, Phil.
Phil liked to call us out on anything, you know, and and that's why we love them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I noticed also this is like, as we got going in this whole adventure, we started upping the look of our motels and the wallpaper and the screen, you know, that we had in that opening motel scene and the murder wall that we had up was, you know, became a signature of many episodes to come. You know, everyone was different, but, you know, we kind of like played with that whole thing of the, if there was a geometric in the wallpaper, we'd turn that into a screen and da 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 da. But that was always fun.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so many hotel rooms in the show. That's such a big challenge, making each one different.
It's only 173.
Oh, that's it? Oh. They say you don't really start getting lost in them until you hit 174. That's literally the breaking point.
I was ready to do the 174.
Jerry, it's always so awesome to have you on here, man. You're just a wealth of knowledge and so entertaining. And this is a great episode to have you on for because it's just so cinematically gorgeous. Beautiful. And creepy and hits all these great notes. And it's just, you know, it's not television, man. It's elevated beyond that.
It's true.
You do such great work, you and your team.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to hang out with you guys, and I'm sure we'll do this again.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Hey there, this is Jensen. I hope you're enjoying the episode. But we need to pull over for a second for some messages, and I gotta take a leak.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So, she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding, and what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know. I've seen dogs eat a sofa, but not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy, she looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf. But I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? Feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPNTAN and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Thanks for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show.
Dude, is there anybody nicer than Jerry? I mean,
so nice.
Not just talented, but just such a great storyteller and remembers everything and just a lovely guest.
And speaking of pictures we need to post, that picture he just sent us, Jerry was a stud. He was a male model, turns out. And he showed us this picture of his when he used to be a male model. And he was a stud.
He sent us an ad of himself of what is he advertising?
I don't know, but talk about Kenny Loggins. Move over, Kenny Loggins.
Well, Kenny Loggins' mustache would take a knee if Jerry's mustache walked in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Good Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, great guy and such a huge, huge part of this show. I mean, such a, you know, between him and Serge, the look of this show. Okay, let's get on to the mythology.
Hoodoo mythology.
Okay, hoodoo and voodoo are often confused. Both are practiced and have roots in the Caribbean and Africa with pagan and even elements of European religions.
You know, voodoo typically invokes African deities, while hoodoo invokes magic from Catholic saints. Hoodoo practitioners are often Roman Catholic, and it is considered more purely a form of folk magic.
That's right. While voodoo is recognized as its own religion and has a formal organization, has its own magic, culture, traditions, music, and philosophy.
Hoodoo dolls? We do dolls.
That's right. In practice, effigy dolls are more commonly used to heal rather than harm.
Western culture is most familiar with the voodoo doll that you stick pins in to cause pain in someone. Like, for example, I have this voodoo doll of Robbie, and I'm going to stick a pin in it right now.
Ow!
See? That's how it works. However, effigy dolls exist in many cultures around the world, including Middle Eastern and Asian cultures.
That's right. I had another fun fact about this episode. Oh, I know what it was going to be. Oh, this
I know you're going to say. I'm not going to say it. You say it.
I don't know if it is the same thing. What were you going to say?
Oh, mine's written down here. But yeah, so never mind. Mine's already noted.
Oh, I was going to say, I love miniatures. And have you ever been to the Museum of Miniatures on Wilshire Boulevard?
I have not. It's too small for me to get in.
Hey, we'll be here all week, guys. All right, speaking of, it's time for fun facts.
Fun facts.
Dean calls Sam a Sasquatch when he's trying to get him to sleep off the booze. Sasquatch is a real nickname Jensen uses for Jared.
I'm laughing already. I know those guys super well. I've never heard them use that name.
Ever.
Nope.
No.
Busting up that myth right now.
And here we go. This is the last time we see Sam wearing a plaster cast on his wrist.
And I noticed the cast this time, for sure.
When Dean recommends a greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray, this is a reference to the John Hughes film Weird Science.
That's what left out to me. It's a line from Bill Paxton.
Paxton.
Who says that to Wyatt, played by Anthony Michael Hall.
I've forgotten that.
I can't remember. Maybe the other
that
kid,
other
but,
the other kid. Yeah.
But anyway, it's a classic line that Bill Paxton delivers as Chet, the older brother in Weird Science.
There you go. Well, thanks everybody. What a great episode and what a fun interview with Jerry.
Oh, it was so great, and we all learned a lot about voodoo, and Rob's love of miniatures.
Exactly, and I know that now the answer to hoodoo, you do. This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Annie Wershing, Maitreya Fedor, Conchita Campbell, Talia Williams, John R. Taylor, Rob Bruner, and Brenda McDonald.
Big guest cast. Yeah. Playthings was written by Matt Witten, directed by Charles Beeson.
Edited by Anthony Pinker, music by Jay Greska.
Supernatural is executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
The episode featured the song Voodoo Spell, that's appropriate, by Michael Burks.
And the episode originally aired on January 18th, 2007.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
This episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
Podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at SBN Then and Now.
And become a member of the show to get bonus stuff at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
Hoodoo mythology. Hoodoo and voodoo are often confused.
Wait, say that again. What's the title?
Hoodoo and voodoo?
No. What's it called? Hoodoo what?
Hoodoo mythology.
We do mythology.
I hope everyone appreciated how much went into him recreating that moment. No. Say it again. Hoodoo what? Hoodoo. Voodoo economics? Something O-O. V-O-O-D-O-O. Voodoo. You know what that's from?
Saturday Night Live?
No, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Ah.
Anybody? Something economics? Anybody?
Yeah. And now a commercial for Warner Brothers' latest animated feature.
Richard, did you get the porn stash?
Let's see, hold on.
This episode of Super...
There are so many do jokes that we are leaving on the table.
Because we don't have time.
We don't have time. I just want everybody to know that we could really go to town on this. You're welcome that we're not. You're welcome, everybody. And by the way, there's plenty of do humor in here, and Steve's putting it all in the edit or I walk.
Maybe we'll do 45 minutes of our hoodoo bit for Patreon.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Rob Benedict just hit on Jerry Wanick. on the Supernatural podcast.
You're not leaving this bar without...
When I did this, scribbled on your arm.
Storybell Media.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.